I started realizing that finances maybe worked a little differently than I realized in the past. I was a Dave Ramsey disciple, so you know, there's like one path. You pay off your debt, you do snowball, and then you save an emergency fund. And so I just thought that was what the financial journey looked like, and everyone was on this path, and that was the one path. And then when I started realizing, oh, there's all these different ways that you can kind of strategically save money, invest money, and move, it was like a light bulb went off.
You're listening to the Reinvest Podcast, where we dive deep into the power of real estate investing, where you will learn how to build wealth and maximize your life. Your hosts, Garrett Gatton and Seth Simonillo. Welcome to the second show ever of the Reinvest Podcast. Your hosts, Garrett and Seth Simonillo, here with you today. Got some awesome content in front of us. Just a couple of reminders as we get this show off the runway here. New episodes will come out on the first and third Tuesday of every month. So you can look for us on Spotify, Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, Stitcher, all the major platforms, Buzzsprout, to find those new episodes on the first and third Tuesday of every month. Hoping to get a few of these under our belt, and who knows, we may increase the frequency that we do these here in the future ongoing. And if you're new to the Reinvest Podcast, why we're doing this is for the purpose of empowering you to build wealth and maximize your life through real estate investing. We're sold on it. We are both real estate investors, active and growing in our experience and in our portfolios. We're rubbing shoulders daily through our real estate business with other like-minded investors who are just getting it in real estate in a lot of different ways. Last thing is, make sure to check the show notes after each episode. Under this, you'll find resources mentioned during the show and how to connect with us or the guests that we have for the day. So, Seth, do you want to give us a little intro about who we bring on today?
Yeah, absolutely. We are excited for David Young to be on the show today. Garrett and I have both known him for a long time. And full disclosure, David is my brother-in-law, so it's good to have some family on the show here today, and I'm excited that he was able to take some time and talk with us.
Glad to be here.
David is an electrical engineer, very educated, very smart. Him and his wife have been really successful so far in their real estate endeavors, and a lot of that is due to his analytical mind and his way that he thinks through things and is a problem solver. And really tries to plan ahead as he's doing some of these investments. And so we wanted to pick his brain today and ask about how he's doing his flips, how he is implementing the BRRRR strategy. So just a few quick questions before we kind of dig into that, David. Why don't you go ahead and tell us how you got started in real estate investing?
Sure. So about 2017, I moved from Dallas back to Lima to work at a nonprofit. And after doing some work in a nonprofit and a church, the finances weren't really coming in to be able to cover expenses that we were having. And my plan was to eventually go to get my PhD. And I knew working in those realms, I wasn't going to have the money that I needed. So I went back to working as an engineer. And I still worked for the same firm that I had worked for when I lived in Dallas. And as I began to figure out how I had to set up my company as an independent contractor, but still do work for them down in Dallas while I was living up in Ohio, I kind of got lost in the weeds of tax strategies and all of these different things. And I started realizing that finances maybe worked a little differently than I had realized in the past. I was a Dave Ramsey disciple. So, you know, there's like one path, you pay off your debt, you do snowball, and then you save an emergency fund. And so I just thought that was what the financial journey looked like, and everyone was on this path, and that was the one path. And then when I started realizing, oh, there's all these different ways that you can kind of strategically save money, invest money, and move, it was like a light bulb went off. And as you guys know, you mentioned I'm a very analytical, strategic thinker. I love things like that. When I play Uno, I don't just sit there and wait for my turn to come. I'm analyzing what everyone else is playing, what cards they have, don't have, so I can win down the road. And so when I realized I could do that with finances, I'm like, this is more fun than just saving money in my savings account.
And Dave Ramsey, I mean, they have like, there's a lot of obviously great stuff there. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but when I look at kind of what he's put out there and his strategy, it's really tailored to a unique audience, like to a specific individual, maybe somebody who's got a lot of student debt, who's trying to get their spending under control. Like it has value, but there's another strategy out there.
Yeah, I think what Dave Ramsey has to offer is fantastic, and it served me well for the years that I kind of abided by his teaching. And I still would agree with almost all that he has to say. And I think it's a great way to order your finances and to be safe. But there's other ways beyond that to build wealth and to use things like debt, as a positive way. And when I started realizing all of that, I started thinking, okay, so what can I do with this information? And I was looking at different streams that I could get into to create some passive income. And so the first thing I actually looked at was doing drop shipping with Amazon. And I got into that a little bit, thinking about what all I could do. And then I realized after reading Rich Dad Poor Dad, which will probably be mentioned on about every episode of this podcast.
It's a classic.
I never heard of it.
Yeah. It's a great book. You should pick it up sometime. After reading that book, I was like, oh, real estate seems like another great way to get into this. And so my wife and I were trying to decide, do we want to, you know, do the Amazon route? Do we want to do real estate? And our decision was kind of made for us because we had already started into real estate accidentally when we bought our house a few years previous. We got one of those classic buy one, get one free deals in real estate that you see all the time.
Classic.
You get those. I got like three of those last week. They're pretty common.
Yeah, really common. We bought our house in the small town of Vonsville back in 2017, and the sellers offered us the house beside it as well with the condition that we would tear it down because it was in pretty rough shape. And the reason we had to tear it down is the previous owner gave it to them because she didn't want to sell it to someone thinking that it would turn into a drug house. It was worth like $15,000 in her estimation. And so they took it from her with the agreement that they would tear it down, but they had some health issues come up. So they passed that on to us. And when we decided to get into real estate, we realized this house has great bones. It's, you know, just needs a lot of work. And so we got them to agree to let us keep it up for as long as we gutted it and basically redid the entire house from the basement up to the attic. So that way it would be a good house and it wouldn't be a drug house. And we felt like that kind of complied with the original owner's wishes. And so that was our first flip and we've been hooked ever since.
So and on that, it was right next door. And do you mind talking some loose numbers on that? Like what you bought both of them for, what you sold the one for?
Yeah. So we bought both of them together for $65,001. The $1 is what we paid for the house that had to be torn down just so it could be recorded. And so on that house, we kind of run the numbers as we bought it for $1. And a couple of years ago now, I think we put about $45,000 to $50,000 into it and ended up selling it to my brother for just a little bit less than 90,000, I think.
Wow. It's quite the, so we split the profit. Quite the house hack.
Yeah. We split the profits of that with my parents, who my dad helped a lot on that project and a lot of our other projects has been a huge resource for us and a help.
Wow.
Yeah, that's awesome. So real quick, before we kind of dig into talking about maybe the BRRRR strategy and how you plan to use it on some of your investments moving forward, you want to give us a current snapshot of what you have your hand in right now?
Sure. So we mostly invest in kind of like Northwest Ohio area, Allen and Putnam County. Like I said, we live in Vonsville. There's 107 houses total in Vonsville. We've flipped
metropolis.
A handful of them now. And so being in a small community, we kind of get inside scoop on what's going on, where people are moving and when people are leaving and when houses become available. So we just finished up a triplex here in town that just hit the market to be rented out. So that's our most recent project that we finished. And right now I'm working on a flip that's in Lima in Allen County as well.
And how many flips have you done so far?
So we've completed 3 houses. And then as far as rental units, we have 33 total rental units. A large portion of that is a 29 unit apartment complex that we're like a small partner on. So I don't know, how do you count that? I think it sounds, you know, really big, like, oh, we have 33 units.
If you're trying to flex on somebody.
Well, really, we're just a small portion of the ownership on the 29 units. So we have 4 other units that we own outright.
Yeah. Awesome. So I remember when we had sat down and gotten lunch, around the same time I got my license, shortly after, we started having some conversations about real estate investing and what that might look like. One of the things we're going to focus on today really is an acronym called BRRRR, and how you guys are using that. And then also kind of leaning on your expertise to contrast that with flipping, because they're 2 different strategies altogether. Yeah. Tell us, I mean, that may be an acronym that's new for somebody. So where does that come from, and how did you first hear about the BRRRR strategy?
So I first heard about the BRRRR strategy while I was working with you, Garrett, on your brother-in-law's roof, and you were sharing with me all these things that you were learning about real estate. And I thought, okay, that's interesting. This was before I started my real estate journey. So I just passed it off and I was like, good for Garrett. And then all of a sudden I was like, this real estate thing is interesting. Hey, Garrett, tell me more about this. So you kind of connected me with Bigger Pockets and David Green's book on BRRRR, which the BRRRR acronym, B-R-R-R-R, stands for buy, rehab, rent, refinance, and repeat, which is just a process to go through to get some rental properties that can cash flow. In my experience, there's a couple other R's in there. Usually it's buy, rehab, regret, regroup, then rent, refinance, and repeat.
BRRRR.
Yeah. I've always had that, you know, you buy a property and you start getting into it and you're just like, oh man, what did we get into?
Our coworker,
regroup and keep going.
Our coworker Dave says he's going to put the bleed into BRRRR. Buy, bleed, rehab.
BRRRR.
That's funny. So just the strategy on that is, you got cash up front, you acquire the real estate and rehab the real estate all with cash. And then once it's done and you find, you know, a long-term tenant, whatever the rental situation is, it's a buy and hold scenario. You go to the bank, you borrow against the value of the property, pulling out 75, 80% of the value, of the appraised value, and you get your money back. And then you take that lump sum, and then you snowball that into another property, and you just kind of repeat that method. And it allows you to take an initial amount of capital and use it to get something running, and then to get it back into your pocket quickly and repeat that process. You can scale a lot faster that way. In some scenarios, and I don't know if you guys have experienced this or even if you've heard of people do this before, but you can actually pull more money out than what you put in. So sometimes you're getting more than your initial capital investment back, depending on how much equity you forced.
Yeah, we haven't been able to do that yet, but it sounds great.
Something to shoot for. So, okay, awesome, awesome. So how are you guys? I mean, obviously you flipped a couple. You told us before, kind of as we were gathering notes here, that you're in the process of your first BRRRR full cycle. How have you guys kind of evaluated when you come to a property, which basket it fits in?
Yeah. So to start, our evaluation starts with our personal situation. So the first couple of houses that we did flips because we wanted to get money to pay off student loans that we had. We wanted to take care of some personal items that wouldn't have been taken care of as fast if we kept accumulating rental properties and we're getting, you know, a couple $100 a month in cash flow. It was a lot better on these to get the lump sum so we could pay off our college loans, pay off our car, and be in a position where financially we weren't concerned if something went wrong that we would not be able to pay off these debts that we owed.
So with that, real quick, did you have the money up front to do that?
To pay off the loans or?
To do those first couple flips.
No.
So I mean, where did that come from?
We probably would have paid off the debt. So we, for the first flip, we used a private money loan. We talked with someone that we knew and they agreed to loan us the money. And we paid them interest on it while we had it, and used that money to finance the rehab process and then returned the loan at the end of the rehab process once we sold the house.
So you got a little creative on your financing for the first couple flips. You partnered with your parents because your dad's got some drywall, kind of general construction background, and you were handling a lot on the market side. You want to talk about that partnership and how it kind of leveraged you guys and to be able to do more of these?
Yeah, so working with my dad has been a great experience. I'm super grateful for all that he's done to help us out. He just retired around the same time that we were getting into this from 30 years working construction. Mostly hanging drywall, but he also worked for a time as just a home builder. So he has a large breadth of experience. And so being able to work with him, I'm the engineer. I would draw up the plans, put together the budget, figure out how everything's going to work, the, you know, kind of the order that we needed to go through to get things done, and buying all the materials. My wife loves interior design. So she would pick out all the finishes and the hardware and things like that, the fixtures, and together with my dad, we would kind of put these houses together. So it was a great partnership. We each had our own strength that we were bringing to the table.
I don't know why Samantha didn't let you pick out some of the interior design stuff. You know what I mean?
It's very clear. Even just looking around my office right now, it's clear why this is the only part of the house that I decorate. The rest of the house looks amazing because she does that and does a great job with it. And
so that's a great idea too for people listening. Sometimes we look at the scope of real estate and whether it's doing a flip or buying a, you know, buy a hold rental, people get so overwhelmed with all the details and everything that needs to get done when really sometimes you just got to find that strategic partner and someone to work with you, partner with you, or maybe it's even somebody that you know personally, you can just even come pay and help you get it started. And then, you know, you still have full ownership. But yeah, so you and Samantha did a great job, you know, building that relationship and coming to an agreement with your parents to have you help get some of these under your belt. So,
and that was, we just got back from the Best Ever Conference a couple months ago in Denver, and that's Joe Fairless, and it's a really great commercial real estate conference if you're interested in figuring out good resources to go to events like that. And he did a session where he talked about partnerships, and the pros and like how to identify when you're in an unhealthy partnership. And one thing that he said is, if you're partnered with somebody, that, doesn't add value to what you're doing, then they're a very expensive employee. And so when you think about partnerships, there's really kind of three seats. There's the hustle, you know, the grunt work, the labor, the boots on the ground person. You've got the expertise, somebody who's been down the road. They know how the process works. You know, like you said, your engineering kind of expertise, offering the knowledge aspect, and then the money and the financing piece. So if you're listening to this and you're trying to figure out how to, who you should be partnering with, it's probably a good idea to identify what do you have to offer. And then what is that missing piece that you're trying to fit in? Is it somebody that has money? Is it somebody that has experience, but you're willing to put the sweat equity into it? And like you said, David, you obviously found kind of that perfect trifecta, you know, with your parents and Samantha. So that's awesome. What are the keys to this kind of investment strategy? What are the pros and the cons to the BRRRR method?
Yeah. So the keys, I think it really comes down to getting a low purchase price on a property and then making sure that you accurately assess the renovation costs and that you also accurately assess the after repair value. If you mess up one of those three things, it can take a good deal to a bad deal really quick.
Wow.
So if we use the example of, let's say you bought a house for $60,000 and you put $20,000 into it and then it appraises for $100,000. So you're in altogether for $80,000. You can refinance that at 80% of the total value and pull out all your money. But if you bought that house at 80,000 instead of 60, it's no longer a good deal. Or the same, if that house needs a whole foundation repair and you end up putting 40 into it instead of 20, it's not a good deal anymore. Or if you completely misjudge the market and after repairs, it's only an $80,000 house, that deal's gone. So I think those are kind of the three big things. If you can do those well, it'll help you understand if the deal is going to be a good deal or not.
So why don't we talk about a little bit, how do you go through your process? What kind of resources are you using to, you know, try to calculate repair costs, who you're reaching out to, or what are you, you know, what are you researching? And then the same thing for how do you get a pulse on the market? Cause you're not an agent. You know, so how do you use your resources in front of you, get a pulse on the market to get a feel for after value repair?
Yeah. So for renovation costs, the first house we did was great because we didn't have a purchase price. So if we blew the budget, we were still going to make money. And that let me learn, we did almost everything on that house. We, you know, all new electrical, all new plumbing, all new HVAC, all new floors, new walls, insulation. So I kind of got to get an idea of what everything costs on that, except for roof and siding. And that's what we did in our second house. And I learned that's a lot more expensive than I thought. Mm-hmm. So a lot of that's just from experience or talking to contractors and getting quotes. And we had to do a foundation on one property. And so I called up somebody when we were looking to buy it and just said, hey, can you give me a rough order of magnitude, you know, within a couple of $1,000s, is this going to be a $4,000 fix or is this a $20,000 fix? And just him giving me that rough number, let me know, okay, we're safe as long as, you know, all the other things work out. As far as assessing the after repair value, I'll largely go to agents and say, hey, I'm looking at this house. If this was in good condition, what would it sell for on the market right now? And have them run some comps for me. Or I also like jumping on Zillow and looking at the sold numbers and see what houses in the neighborhood have sold recently that have same square footage, same numbers, and kind of limit it to the last 3 to 6 months. And that'll give me a rough idea. But to really get a good number that you can rely on, I would go to an agent.
Yeah, that's great. That's great advice.
When we think about the BRRRR method with having kind of a lump sum of cash to work with on the front end to acquire and renovate the property, you guys are working on one right now that you actually had, you did it a little different approach. Do you want to talk about how that was different?
Yeah. So as you mentioned with the BRRRR method, typically you're buying for cash up front. And that's how you can make your money go the farthest, but we didn't have $60,000, $80,000 to put towards a house and then the additional money to put towards a rehab. And we haven't really developed any private money lenders that we could go to for that level, where we felt comfortable holding their money for that period of time, or even a hard money lender where you're going to be paying higher interest rates, like 10 to 12%. So we went to our bank and just said, hey, this is what we're wanting to do. On this one, it was a two-house package. So we found this local investor who was selling off his portfolio. We identified three houses that we thought these fit our criteria for what we're looking for. We went and looked at them, dropped one of them out of the package when it was clearly in rougher shape than what we had thought and wasn't going to be a good investment for us. And so we stuck with the two and packaged them together to get a discount. And then we took out a loan on the front end. So we purchased the houses for, I believe, $94,000 and took out a loan for 75% of that value. And then we're financing part of the renovation out of our own pocket. And then some of it we're using private money loan to cover the renovation costs. Then the goal from the get-go was to rehab both of these properties. They had tenants at the time, so we're working on one right now. The other one still has tenants on it that are paying rent. And so that's covering the expenses on that property. And then when we finish this one, the plan is to move to the next one when the tenants move out. And when we're done with both of these houses together, it'll take us about a year. We'll be past the seasoning period where we couldn't refinance right away. And this will allow us to then refinance with the after repair value, which should be a higher value, and pull our money back out.
So this is what I love about this is one of the limitations to the BRRRR strategy is you need that initial capital investment. And depending on what market you're talking about doing this in, that could be sizable. I mean, Lima is on the lower side of what you can get into on a single family house and a renovation. It wouldn't be anything for somebody to have to maybe have $100,000 or $150,000 set aside to kind of start that first property. So you guys are, you didn't have that. So instead of just kind of waiting and saving, you financed it on the front end to get the house. And maybe you're using the capital you did have for the renovation. And the key there, obviously, is these are value add deals. So, you know, you're going to have more closing costs associated with this because you're essentially closing on it to acquire it. And then you're going to close on the refinance side of things too. But as long as the margin's there, it effectively is the same end result.
Yeah, exactly. We're figuring about $2,500 in closing costs on the back end. So as long as we have the margins there to do it, it works out great. And that's what I love about the BRRRR strategy. Again, it's not like a single path that you go down. You can be creative with it. There's one house that we bought in cash, because it was a foreclosure auction. We had to pay cash. We paid cash for it. And then after we closed on it, we went to the bank and said we wanted to take out a loan for the purchase and the renovation costs together. And they lumped that together. So we were able to get both of those covered and kind of get some of our initial cash in back. So there's all sorts of different ways that you can make a deal work out if the numbers are there.
What are the margins you guys like to have on a deal that you would do this with? In terms of where you want to be with cash flow on the back end, you know, how much do you want to pull out from the refinance?
Yeah, to make it a real BRRRR, we want to, you know, make sure that our purchase, rehab, financing costs, holding costs are going to be less than 75% of the after repair value. And it's important to consider holding costs. That's something we missed on one of our properties, mm-hmm. where we didn't think about the utilities that we were paying, the property taxes that we're going to be paying while it's under construction. And that will add up pretty quickly. As far as cash flow on the backside, it really depends on the amount of work that's going to go into a property. I would say $100 a unit is what we look for, but I'm not going to sink 12 months of rehab into a house that's only going to give me $100 in cash flow. If it's a quick 3-month turnaround, then I would consider it. But if it's something that's going to be a larger project, then we want to see a larger return after all things are said and done.
What do you think that usually is? $200 to $300 a door or more or what?
Yeah, that's where I think if we see $200 to $300, then it kind of gets us thinking, okay, how can we make this work?
Right. Cause not only are you going to be having the cash flow, you're going to have the equity and the loan pay down for the future and the real estate and all that. So.
Yeah. And we really try to run our numbers worst case scenario. What if things go wrong? Because you can make any deal work on paper. If you like it enough and you're emotionally invested in it, you can find a way to make it work. It doesn't always work out in real life though.
I don't need a management company. Like I could do it myself.
Save that 5 to 7 to 10%. Yeah. That's really good.
Yeah. That's like a recipe.
I can install a roof myself. I can put in a new furnace and air conditioner. And
when you want a deal to work, you're like a general contractor. Like I'll just do it myself.
When you come up with your initial budget for these rehabs real quick, do you like budget like, hey, here's my initial budget, but I'm going to just go ahead and add 10 or 20% onto that? Or how do you usually try to be conservative with those rehab numbers?
I'll usually put a 10 to 20% contingency on it because there's always going to be things that come up that I forget. On the last flip that we did, I didn't really take into consideration the landscaping costs. And that ended up being a couple hundred dollars, I think $500 to $600 that we had to put into getting the landscaping looking right. So I had a $2,500 contingency fund and I wasn't, you know, I didn't break the bank because I had this extra expense that I didn't anticipate.
Yeah. And I'll say this on the expense side of things, you know, this last part of the last 2 months, we've been, our team has been evaluating a lot of multifamily deals and it's really good to see people's, profit loss statements, their expenses, you know, however they capture those. Sometimes it's like on the back of a napkin, which is kind of alarming. And, And then it's also good to look at those and evaluate them, because you forget how many line items there are, not just on the rehab side of things, but also on the operating expense of a property. Things that you, I think, are, like you said, when you're caught up in the emotion, you can overlook them because they seem like small. But cumulatively, if you're talking about $50 or $60 a month worth of expenses you didn't account for, and you're trying to get $200 cash flow, I mean, you just cut into your profit a lot. So it is really important to be accurate on those and capture them on the front end. Have you gone back, now that you've done some of these like full cycle, and looked at what your projected budget was compared to what your actual expenses were?
Yeah. So for each of these projects, because I'm a analyzer engineer, I have a complete spreadsheet budget that I start out with at the beginning. And it's broken up into line items by total electrical costs, plumbing costs, framing, all the different kind of categories of things that you're going to be working on. And then I evaluate, how did we do on each of these? So I know on the next one, hey, I need to increase my budget for electrical expenses by 20 to 30%. So on each of the projects, we've come in under budget, except for one, we ended up going over budget, but that was a conscious decision where we realized the market was heating up really quick where the house was located. And that if we went a little bit higher end on some of our finishes and fixtures, we could demand a higher cost from the market. So it was an intentional decision to go over budget because we thought we would get the return on it.
How many people do you know, Seth, that have said they're under budget on their projects?
I could probably list them on my one hand because it's not very many. Usually people get into it and they're like, Oh my gosh. I know for my duplex that I rehab both sides, I think my initial budget was to try to stay like around 10 to 12 grand. And you know, I'm not super analytical, so I'm just like kind of keeping track in my head. But after I got completely done with both sides, I was at like 16 grand. And I was like, oh.
But it looks really nice.
It looks nice. It still cash flows great. So it's still okay. So.
And that's the thing about real estate is when you buy right, going back to your comment initially, the very first component, when you buy right, that is all of the grace and the margin happens right at that moment. And that's when real estate can be really forgiving, when you overlook something or there's just a hidden cost that pops up when you're kind of getting in to see the scope of the property after you purchase it. That's where your margin's going to be. So absolutely, you make money in real estate when you buy.
So we are kind of moving on here to the next segment of our show. And so this segment we like to call Smaller Pockets. So this is the part of the show where we talk about maybe not your best deal, but one of your deals that have maybe gone wrong and what you learned from it. Because at the end of the day, we learn the most usually from our mistakes and the things that we kind of get tripped up on. And the more we can pass that information and those lessons to our listeners, the better. So David, do you want to just give us maybe one of your deals that didn't go right, you know, or maybe just a completely different outcome than you had initially planned and what you guys are learning from it?
Absolutely. This is not a sore subject at all.
It's for the listeners, so, David.
Yes, for the listeners. Thankfully, we haven't had any deals go terribly, terribly wrong. Right now, we are in the regret phase of the BRRRR process on one of our houses.
The regret phase.
So this is the one that feels like it's gone wrong. We're more so in, I guess, the regrouping stage where we're trying to figure out, how do we make this work? So this is the two house package that we bought about 6 months ago. Both houses had tenants in it. And like I mentioned, the original plan was to fix up one and then re-rent it out. And when the tenants moved out of the other one, fix that one up and then refinance. Well, when the tenants moved out of the first one and left a house full of junk for us to enjoy, we realized the amount of work was a lot more than we had anticipated. There were a lot of things that we couldn't see when they had posters up on the wall hiding cracks in the plaster and rugs on the floor hiding where the wood floor had started chipping and things like that. And so we realized that this $10,000 rehab that we initially thought was going to be the case is going to be more like a $20,000 rehab.
Mm.
On the other side of things, we thought, well, we'll at least be able to get really good cash flow because it was a large property. And our plan was to make it into a college rental where we could get $1,400 to $1,700 a month for it. But we didn't take into consideration that the parking is not that great at this property. So it has a shared drive. We had to tear down the garage that was there because the roof had collapsed. And the on-street parking is only good for about 9 months out of the year because it's a snowplow road. So you have to have your cars off the road if there's snow on the ground. So there's no way that four college students would be able to park their four, five, or six vehicles at this property. So now we're looking at it as a single family rental, and it's probably going to get around $900 a month, just based on the neighborhood that it's in. So our repair costs went through the roof and our cash flow plummeted. So we kind of reevaluated the process and decided that this is going to be better as a flip. So it's really important, and we've always tried to have multiple exit strategies when starting a property, where if something goes wrong, if the market shifts, there's multiple ways that you can use the property to provide income or capital for you if you need to sell or move out of it. Or even if it's a flip house, knowing that, hey, this has potential to rent when I'm all set, when everything is said and done. So right now we're working on it as a flip, and we're, you know, just at the process where we're starting to put in new electrical and new plumbing. So we'll still make a small profit on it as a flip, but we, you know, at least we won't be losing money. It's nowhere near as good as the other flips that we've done.
So that is so huge, as you're talking about finding a good deal. So we said buy, you know, you got to buy it right. But then secondly, a good deal has multiple exit strategies. And if you're kind of hedging your strategy on one thing, I mean, there's so many moving parts and pieces in real estate and so many variables that it can change really quickly. So did you guys kind of have that in the back of your mind that there was the potential to flip this, or did that just come from buying it for the right price?
Yeah, from buying it, we would have paid a lot less to get it as a flip. But once we started getting into it and realizing it, we still knew that was an option. It just wasn't going to provide us the return on our time and our investment that we would have liked. But we still knew there was a way to get out of it without us losing $10,000 to $20,000 on the deal.
Right. And that's the important part. And that's the awesome part about you guys just being able to be kind of fluid with the situation. So that's important for us all. We need to have an exit, more than one exit strategy. And then also you need to be able to pivot. Don't keep running to, you know, don't keep driving your car if you know you're going to crash. So, cause you could have went the, you know, single family house route, and would you have cash flowed at all at that point, or would have been pretty minimal?
It would have been negative. We would have lost money every month on it.
Right. So yeah, that's awesome. You guys were able to pivot and move it over into a flip. And even though it's not going to be a slam dunk, you know, you're not going to be negative cash flowing, with an asset that's not going to be appreciating. So yeah, that's a great lesson.
So we're going to, in the show notes, we'll have to modify the acronym BRRRR for buy, rehab, regret, regroup, rent, and then repeat. So, and then we're going to, you can copyright that. And I don't know if we're legally allowed to give you any kind of royalty kickback off that, but we'll try.
You might be able to sell that idea to David Green.
I think he's probably got hundreds of people saying like, oh, add this to the acronym.
Oh, that's funny. All right. So we're coming up here to our 40-minute marker. We're going to go into our next show segment called our Little Nugget. What is one golden nugget to impart to our listeners? Could be a tried and true lesson that you've learned. Could be kind of a real estate life hack. It could be incredibly practical, or just like a good core truth that's guided you thus far.
I would have to go with invest in what you know and where you have the advantage. So when we were looking at getting into different streams of investment, we could have done, you know, invest in the stock market, cryptocurrency, NFTs, drop shipping. But I didn't understand any of those the way that I understood construction and houses, and having the connection with my dad being able to help. I think that was one area that we could invest in something that we knew already and didn't have to spend a lot of time learning about. And then invest where you have the advantage. So for us, that was investing here locally. I saw an article that showed that Allen County is in the top 90% of rent to house price ratio, which is a good indicator for a place where you'll be able to make money on single family rentals. So being able to invest locally was great. And we had the advantage too, because I've lived here for most of my life. So I know the neighborhoods, I know where I don't want to buy houses, where I want to buy houses. We have relationships and connections. And we had the connection with my dad, where that gave us a huge advantage to be able to do a lot of these, probably 80% of our work without having to hire anything out, which has saved us a lot on our flips. So invest in what you know and where you have the advantage.
Yeah, it's a huge advantage when you can do some of that work yourself. I mean, you got to, you know, count the cost and value of your time and, you know, your dad's time. But as long as you're kind of budgeting that out to pay yourselves back in the end, you know, it's okay.
Yeah.
Couple ending questions here. What resource has made the biggest impact on your real estate investing career?
People. Working with and learning from my dad has been the biggest resource and the biggest help for me understanding what goes into a house and making a house good. He is an excellent contractor that does things with excellence. Most of the houses that we have flipped have been in unzoned areas. So we don't have to have inspections or we don't have to, file permits. And it would be really easy to cut corners, but just working with him, I've really got to watch, here's how you do an excellent job and make a property that people, you know, if they're buying it from you, they'll be able to enjoy it for years to come without worrying about things going wrong. So yeah, learning from people and even working with agents, brokers, other investors has helped me learn so much about the market, especially in this area.
I love that you hit on that. Even just with your dad, there's a whole generation of these older guys who have, they'll forget more than we'll ever learn. And I know, talking firsthand to a lot of them, how absolutely elated they would be if a young guy came along and just said, hey, I want to learn underneath of you. I want to help you. You're going on a job site. Like, you know, I'll carry dirt. You know what I mean? Like, I'll just be around to be a sponge and soak. Because when these guys are gone, you know, a lot of that knowledge is going to go with them. So, my father-in-law is also very similar to your dad, David. And, those moments have been invaluable, being on the job site together. Even if I'm not the one swinging the hammer long term, it gives me the understanding that I need to oversee some kind of a construction project that maybe a general contractor is going to do or subcontractors are doing on my properties. So yeah, I love that. Last one, how can people learn more about you or get in contact with you from today? Just hearing your story, maybe wanting to ask a couple questions that we didn't get to cover.
Absolutely. Probably the best way is through our Instagram account, DoGoodREI. That is where we'll post occasionally about some of the projects that we're working on and the best way for us to communicate and message back and forth.
Awesome. We'll put that in the show notes. Guys, thank you so much for tuning into our second episode of the Reinvest Podcast. And David, thanks for being our guest today.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. And before we end for today, David had just mentioned that he's learned so much from other people, other real estate agents, other brokers, other investors. And the best place for you to do that is at a local real estate meetup. So if you're listening, you need to research your city, your town, your county, and find out where the real estate meetups are happening, because you can find them pretty much most places. I know we are having another one here in Lima, Ohio, here near the end of April, April 21st, Thursday, starting at 6:30. And we'll go ahead and put that information in the show notes as well. So if you're around our area, you should definitely come and visit us there, and we can all share some, you know, knowledge and advice with each other that makes us all better real estate investors.
Awesome, guys. Well, thank you so much, David. And until next time, thanks for joining us on this week's episode of the Reinvest Podcast. Hit those 5 stars on our profile if you enjoyed our content. And make sure to stay tuned every first and third Tuesday of the month for new episodes. And if you want to get in touch with us, go to our LinkedIn or Facebook profiles and shoot us a message. We will see you next time.